Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. So today's show is going to be about 5G radiation and the dangers that come from 5G radiation. Well, first, let's start off with, well, what the heck is going on with 5G in general? And why is this a big deal? And I hope everybody listening to the show already understands what 4G is and what 3G was, but I'll cover that real briefly anyhow. So 3G was the kind of old style cellular wireless network bandwidth. It was a particular type of EMF, that electromagnetic frequency, that operated for cellular towers. And it just didn't have the capacity for the number of channels and the number of total bandwidth that 4G had. So 4G was then introduced, and we've all been using 4G for a long time now. Well, now, of course, there's 5G, and this has been getting rolled out in many places in the world as 5G. And so as a result of that, there's been an awful lot of studies that have been done with regards to 5G. And certainly there are people out there that say that there are no dangers of 5G. But unfortunately, there's an awful lot of evidence saying that, yeah, there is a lot of health dangers associated with 5G radiation. And I think that this is particularly relevant for us in southeastern Wisconsin, because Foxconn is coming into the area, and they have very specifically stated that they are pushing for the Smart Cities Initiative, which I'm very skeptical of anyways, because the Smart Cities Initiative in China has led specifically to a totalitarian, omnipresent, omniscient level of awareness as to what every person is doing. It's ubiquitous. They have surveillance cameras everywhere. They have these smart lighting posts that have wireless antennas in them, and what they're doing is picking up your cell phones and your cell phone data as it is passing and tracking you, tracking your location, tracking your face. And this sort of technology has actually been in places like Portland, Oregon and Seattle, Washington for years. It's been pretty widely distributed amongst Chicago as well. So, you know, this is nothing new, but it is new to southeastern Wisconsin. And my understanding of people in southeastern Wisconsin, considering that I've spent most of my life here, is that in general, people in southeastern Wisconsin actually do care about their privacy. They do care about liberty. So it is concerning to me, not only from a health perspective about 5G radiation, but also from what it comes along with. And the reason that I say that is because 5G is a technology that does not have the distance carrier of other services such as 4G or 3G. I think really the best way to understand this is to think of the transmissibility, not only in terms of penetration through difficult objects such as steel and concrete, building construction. So it's not only the transmissibility through objects, but it's overall a distance level as well. So if we think about the comparison of 2.4 gigahertz wireless versus 5 gigahertz wireless, it's very common for 2.4 gigahertz wireless to overpenetrate and to go over distance. And very, very few people actually manage the power levels actively of the radios and their wireless equipment. And that as a result, what you find in most residential areas, and really it's even worse in multi-tenant business facilities, where there is so much noise from a wireless perspective, a wireless spectrum, there's so much interference because there's all of these competing wireless access points. They're all trying to blast out over the same congested airwave space. And the way that they try to get that signal, when I say they, I'm talking about the wireless access points here. The way the wireless access points try to get that signal to the devices in this congested scenario where there's high density like that is that they blast. They crank up their radio power and just blast. And there is an organization out in Minnesota that happens to have an office in a high density office building that I work with. And it's the signal issue is so bad in their space that it's almost impossible to have wireless that's even effective because there's so much signal interference, co-channel interference, neighbor interference. And so it's just very difficult to get anything to actually work effectively. And the problem is you can't manage what the wireless of your neighbors is doing. And I've run into an abundance of situations in residential scenarios where there is a wireless network at a home and it's been fine for a long time. And then one day it just suddenly starts to have a whole bunch of signal interference problems. Well, in 100% of the cases, what happened was that one of their neighbors or multiple of their neighbors changed their own wireless infrastructure. Maybe they got a new wireless access point. They changed out a new wireless router. Well, they did something. And again, the problem is you have no control over what your neighbors do. And so all of this signal is just pounding and interfering. And the only way that the APs can deal with that is just to crank up their transmit power and push harder. Well, the same thing similarly applies with 5G. The wireless in general, whether we're talking about cellular data coverage or we're talking about things like wireless networks over 2.4 gigahertz or, you know, 5 gigahertz, wireless has never, and I doubt will it ever be, as reliable and effective as a physically cabled wired connection. We can look simply at the factors of satellite connectivity for internet connections. I mean, it's just terrible. The latency is horrible and it's not reliable. It gets knocked out by simply weather conditions in the atmosphere all the time. And with regards to point-to-point microwave, so this is where you have a microwave dish, not a satellite dish, but a microwave dish. Again, you have all kinds of problems with latency. And yes, it's not as bad as satellite. That's absolutely true. And you don't have as much interference. But the problem is everything is mounted onto these dishes are mounted onto a tower or they're mounted onto a house or they're mounted onto something that is subject in itself to it's out in the elements all the time and it takes the abuse of that and eventually wears out prematurely because of that. But also just high wind. With these things will cause those dishes to become out of alignment. And well, and then you have issues, right? Because now they're not in alignment. And so you'll see connections go up and down, up and down, up and down. And the way that these things deal with that is that they retransmit and retransmit and retransmit. So airwave based, you know, non-cabled, non-physically wired connectivity in terms of whether we're talking about network or cellular, whatever it is, but that level of connectivity will never be as reliable as a physical cabled wire. And then there's the EMF aspect of it. If you get an EMF detector, which I actually have one, and you check the EMF penetration at a particular distance, and you do some little analysis, it's very, I think, enlightening. And what I discovered is that, and this is from, you know, real scientific analysis that I've done, where if you're about 800 feet away from a high tension power line, all of the EMF radiation that's coming off of that high tension power line drops to a level that is not damaging to the human body. So clearly, if your house was within 800 feet of a high tension power line, the closer you are, the more EMF damage you're getting to your body all the time. And this explains why there's been quite a lot of studies that have stated that if you're living for a long period of time close to a high tension power line, then they have statistically correlated that with an increased risk of leukemia. And I don't know enough about it to say that it has something to do with other cancers, but the studies have shown that it has to do with an increased risk of leukemia specifically. Well, there's been other studies that have specifically talked about the relationship between holding a cell phone to a portion of your body, again, in close proximity, right? I'm talking about this whole distance element, and then the increased risk of cancer. So they're talking about specifically if you hold it up to your head and you consistently do so on your right ear, they've correlated that with brain cancer on the right side of your skull. And they've also looked at situations where women were putting a cell phone in their bra, and then they correlated that with an increased risk of breast cancer. So again, it comes down to keeping this high EMF emitting device or this high EMF emitting source too close to your body, and what impact does that have? There are also studies that have looked into the EMF that comes off of the radio frequency, you know, utility meters. So all the utility meters for probably the last 5 years, maybe even longer, in this specific area, certainly longer in other areas, have been radio frequency based. So most of the time, they don't put out a lot of high EMF, but they do transmit that utility metering data on a particular frequency. And when that radio inside the utility meter does that transmittal, the EMF radiation around that device goes up extremely high. And that has been the assessment of people that have scientifically looked into that. So I think, you know, I'm not picking on any one particular device. What I'm concerned about is where this is going in terms of human health. And what are the implications to human health? And I'm going to link a bunch of articles that you can read on your own and reference on your own and investigate if you so choose to. But let's take this a little bit step further here. There have been some senators recently that have been putting forward bills that have the intent of removing the individuals of a local community's ability, meaning your local represented, you know, electors, your town board, your town representatives, your village and city representatives, to remove their ability to have a say at all as to where high power microwave radiating 5G antennas will be placed. And I think this is it's another interesting aspect to this, which is about 8 months ago, I was looking into getting another facility. And shockingly, everywhere that I looked that seemed to have the right mix of resources for the facility, shockingly, there was a microwave radiating tower well within 800 feet. And that was, you know, I mean, that's very concerning. So if you're going to even use it as your office, what are you at your office 8, 10, 12 hours a day, at least 5 days a week, if not more? So is this really where you want to be in terms of how close do you want to be to that antenna? And if you don't have any control over that antenna, because that antenna is owned by a cellular data company or something like that, then you have no control over what's coming out of it, and you have no ability to influence what's coming out of it. So the only thing that you can do is actually just not buy that property. And that was another interesting observation that I had, which was that people who had very inadvisedly allowed these towers to be placed on their property in some sort of a scheme for them to make money Well, when they went to the time of selling their property, what they found is that nobody wanted anything to do with it. Because intuitively, I think human beings understand that it's really just not a great idea to be living right next to that thing or be spending a significant amount of your time right next to that thing. So now this goes further into this whole 5G concept, which is the way that they want to distribute 5G is they want to put high power microwave radiating 5G antennas on the utility poles outside of your house. And the desire is to create this 5G penetrating mesh, and they have to have a lot of antennas because the 5G just doesn't have the penetration, right? Earlier we talked about how 2.4 gigahertz, which is the old style wireless, has quite a lot of penetration. It goes for a very far distance, and it has a very good penetration through things like steel and concrete. And thick building walls and these sorts of things. You'll even find where 3G will go through metal buildings that really functionally, in very many ways, act as if they're a Faraday cage, which should grab the majority of the EMF outside the metal building and shield it down and around the outside of the metal building and into a grounding source, assuming that the building is grounded. So, when you're inside these metal buildings, you can literally assess this on your own. Take one of your cell phones and go out there, stand inside of a metal building, and notice that your phone will oftentimes go to 3G instead of 4G at that point. And that's just another indicator of the fact that 3G has better penetration than 4G. Well, obviously, 4G has better penetration than 5G. So, in order to make 5G really functionally work, they have to have a lot of antennas. And there's a massive push right now in the state of Wisconsin to saturate the rural areas with 5Gs. If you run around the rural areas of southern Wisconsin and central Wisconsin, what you will see are a lot of towers out there. And those towers right now are delivering a lot of cellular connectivity. And what they're looking to do is turn this into 5G so that it's not just for cellular connectivity, but having the ability to deliver high-speed internet. In many cases out there in rural Wisconsin, one of the biggest problems that people have is they can't actually get a reliable internet connection at a reasonable price that offers adequate bandwidth. Those three things are very hard to obtain. If you take the rural areas surrounding Burlington as a good example of this, Burlington does have a high power microwave tower, and it's run by, a Wisconsin company. And you have to, though, be within about 5 miles of that tower with complete uninterrupted line of sight in order to get a decent signal from that. And I already talked about how all of this connectivity that isn't physically cabled is just not as reliable. So let's say you get some high winds, well, now your internet connection is not going to be reliable. And because it has this higher cost infrastructure associated with it, it's just much more expensive to put in to begin with, and it's much more expensive on a monthly basis as well. So really, this bandwidth capable, this what I think a lot of people would think is a required bandwidth for them to have to their homes, or certainly to run a small business, would probably be a 100 meg internet connection, at least on the download side, and probably 20 megs up. Well, in order to get something like that over a microwave connection, you're going to be paying several hundred dollars a month. And that is frankly outside of the cost profile of what most people can handle at a residential level or what they're willing to pay. So then they're back to this whole realm of low speed DSL junk that's getting offered over telephone connections. The plain old telephone network is bringing in DSL connections. And if you want to run fiber, which AT&T will, if you give them enough money, they'll run fiber, absolutely. But then you're going to probably be paying in excess of $1,000 a month for a symmetrical 10 meg internet connection. And I already stated that 100 meg download is what most people need. A 10 meg download isn't really going to do much of anything. I mean, a 10 meg download can barely service one person, you know, let alone anything else. If you have only a 10 meg download, you're certainly not watching Amazon Prime or Netflix or anything like that. You're not going to run your small business there. And, you know, you may be saying, well, why do people in rural areas need to run a small business? Well, what about all the farmers that have agribusiness? I mean, don't they deserve to have a website and email and the ability to have a reliable connection so that they can drive business to their organic farm or their home sourced materials, such as their greenhouses where they've got, you know, lovely vegetables growing, or maybe their organic chicken eggs and such? I mean, that's really the big problem that exists out in the rural areas, and this also has an adverse impact on rural education. So maybe you don't care about farmers, but you do care about the schools that are out there. So there is a real problem with regards to shortage of viable connectivity for high-speed internet in the rural areas of Wisconsin. And rural, frankly, in our area is west of the interstate. Yeah, I'm serious. I mean, you could just be out in Paris and you might not even be able to get Spectrum cable. Yeah, I mean, it could be that bad. I mean, and Paris is not like, you know, out there that far, right? But if you go up to Raymond, the only option you might have is microwave. That's it. And you're just not going to get that much bandwidth over microwave without paying a lot of money per month, which is just outside of the reach of most people. They can't justify the expenditure. I mean, so imagine you needed that fiber optic connection. Well, that for a symmetrical 10 meg fiber link every month's $1,000. Well, good grief, that's $12,000 a year for a 10 meg connection. I don't really know anyone that would justify that expenditure. It's ridiculous. So, you know, these are big problems, and the way that the companies that are providing internet service are trying to address this is with 5G. Right? So this is coming back to the whole 5G aspect. So the desire by these companies, and certainly Foxconn is a massive advocate of this, is to saturate cities, towns, and villages like Racine, Kenosha, and all of the communities in between with 5G at the behest of supposedly making this better for our lives in order to give us higher bandwidth on our cell phones. Oh, gee, you know, you can watch more movies and things like that. But I would caution that there are health, adverse human health aspects to this. And again, I'll post articles for you. One really interesting article has to do with the Smart Cities Initiative, where the National Toxicology Program invested over $25 million. And they studied the nature of EMF radiation with the aim of proving that all mobile phone radiation was safe. All right, so that was the goal of their investigation. And after $25 million worth of investigation, they found that even the primitive technologies like 2G can cause DNA damage and brain cancer. So now this is the National Toxicology Program. And again, they started their investigation with the objective to prove that cellular mobile phone radiation was safe. But yet what they proved was that even primitive technologies can cause brain cancer, and that they can also cause DNA damage in general anywhere where these emitters of this EMF are too close to your body. So if you extend that thought process into 5G, well, obviously 5G radiation is stronger. And then if we put up lots more towers and we have greater density of this EMF simply because there's more towers, then our bodies will just be more and more and more bombarded by this EMF constantly. So I think this is something that I would encourage you all to do a little investigating on, because I find it concerning. And what recourse does an individual have? I mean, if there are senators that are pushing for regulations that state that a community's own leaders have no ability to influence the place of these antennas, well, that's fundamentally revoking local control, which is violating the civil rights and disenfranchising the individuals that live there in that community and have elected these people to represent them. So that's very concerning from that aspect as well. So maybe what you do with this is get informed, further informed. So as I said, I'll post these articles for you. Let's look at one other little topic here at the end of the show, which is intelligent AV. And intelligent AV is a fairly recent technology that has become mature, right? It's no longer in the development or beta phases. It's now completely production, mature technology. And this intelligent AV capability, I've now seen this being utilized by the leaders in the industry. WatchGuard now has it. Trend Micro has had it for a while. And fundamentally, what this comes down to is managing these new risks called fileless malware and zero-day exploits. And you've probably been previously aware of a concept called advanced persistent threat. And APTs are like zero-day malware. APTs are oftentimes ransomware. And the only way to really effectively detect and mitigate the risk of APTs is to do so at the network layer before those things ever even get to your computers. And the APT blocker capability specifically is like running a little virtual machine, and then it executes this thing that it wants to analyze on this little virtual machine. It's called, typically called, the virtual analyzer. And then it observes what it does. And in the very beginning days of virtual analyzer, the problems were that the malware would detect that it was running in a virtualized environment, and then it wouldn't detonate. Well, the virtual analyzer technology has gotten better to where, you know, it's better at being able to run things and convince them that they're not in a fake environment. Right? So intelligent AV is a flavor of that that is also dealing with the new risk of fileless malware. So let's talk about how there are two forms of anti-malware scanning that typically is happening at the network layer, assuming that you actually have a network security appliance. One is going to be the signature-based behavioral detection, and these are your typical antivirus products and the antivirus, whether it's happening at your endpoint level or at the network level. And then the second type is the machine-based learning detection. This is like intelligent AV. It's like the virtual analyzer technology that is combined. It's usually combined with advanced persistent threat analysis detection and blocking as well. So this is really where you need to be in terms of your capabilities for threat mitigation, because there's in excess of 17,000 new viruses created every hour. As a result of that, how quickly do you think definitions for these things are being written and then distributed? So clearly what that says is the signature-based approach is just not really where the action is anymore. You shouldn't give up on that approach, but it's probably only 10% of the attacks now versus 90% of the attacks are morphing malware, fileless malware, zero-day sort of exploits and things like that. So it's just another reason that you have to have sophisticated network-level security inspection analysis and blocking. All right, well, that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.